Blog Talk Radio.
You find out life's this game of inches. So is football. Because in either game, life or football, the margin for error is so small. I mean, one half a step too late or too early, and you don't quite make it. One half second too slow, too fast, you don't quite catch it. The inches we need are everywhere around us.
Hell yeah.
They're in every break of the game. Every minute, every second. On this team, we fight for that inch. On this team, we tear ourselves and everyone else around us to pieces for that inch.
Yes, indeed, and on this team, we have waited many, many months to get this program coming right back at you. Here, because it would mean then that football season is upon us. Welcome, everybody, and thanks for joining Frat House Mike here on the Frat House Sports Radio Network as we, kick up a brand new season of the NFL with our Frat House Sports' Red Zone Blitz program. It's been a long time since we've come to you here on the air. In fact, the very last one of these was, in fact, on January 19th. Now, we did have a couple of special programs that wrapped in around the AFC and NFC championships and then the Super Bowl itself. But for the most part, well, Red Zone Blitz has been silent. That is until tonight as we enter into our second season of that and the brand new 2015 season. And, you know, it's hard to imagine that just like that, we've got, we waited as long as we possibly could for this to actually get up and going and kicked up there. And, just like that, week one has concluded. And we're already looking at the beginning of week two tomorrow evening. So we've got a lot of catching up to do here. And that's exactly what we're going to do. We're going to be taking a look at a couple of the surprise games that came to us this past weekend from week one. And gosh knows there were quite a few of them. All the hype and all the intrigue didn't live up to expectation for a couple of those teams. We're going to talk about that. We're also going to get into a little bit about what the week one standings look like. We'll take a quick peek at what the schedule looks like for the upcoming week two. A couple of other interesting little developments that occurred in this past week in the NFL. Injury reports as well. Johnny Manziel's back in under center already. Who'd have thunk that one? And a bunch of QBs who posted up some tremendous, tremendous numbers. All of this means that you want to get in with us. Trust me, you do. This is, without a doubt, one of Frat House Sports' best programs. It certainly gets a lot of listens. You're going to want to jump in, and you're going to want to give us your thoughts on your team. We're talking them all. Get in with us. 347-826-9964. That's how you can get a hold of us here. 347-826-9964. If you are listening on a computer and you are Skype capable, just hit the Skype button. Hopefully that puts you through to us loud and clear. Otherwise, get in the chat room, leave us a message there, or hit me up over on Twitter, at Frat House Mike. Notifications are up all the time, and I'm always checking them. Joining me, as always, tough to say. I'm not sure which one of us is a bigger NFL fan, but you got two big ones right here. Joining me, as always, Brandon. Brandon,
hey,
are you as happy as I am? I mean, You know, of all the programs that we do here on the network, this one really is one that I absolutely, positively look forward to every single week. I mean, I look forward to doing all of them, but this one in particular is always a lot of fun. And gosh, it's, you know, it's the one that goes the longest in the off season.
That's true. Yeah, I agree. It is. It's good to be back to football and back to doing this. This is a fun show to do. I like, you know, we usually get into the X's and O's of all the games that we cover, et cetera, et cetera. And it's a lot of fun. So, yeah, it's good to have it back.
And if you're an X's and O's person, well, that's hopefully what you want to hear. We will sprinkle in, hopefully, this coming season. I've got plans to sprinkle in a few guests along the way as we go. So, but this being week one, I thought we would keep it just pretty clean, pretty simple. We'll get back into breaking a couple of key games down. And as you say, getting the chalkboard out. Let's get the chalkboard out. I guess they don't use those anymore. They're using the Surface. That's what they're using now. So
yeah, the Windows tablet.
Yeah. So we'll get something similar to that out. Let's start it off. Let's go over and take a look at I got to be honest, this was a game that kind of shocked me. There were a lot of prognosticators that said, Frat House Mike, you're an idiot if you are shocked. Because there were a lot of people saying, oh, no. The Colts are going to go to Buffalo, and they're not going to win. They're going to lose. The Colts went into Buffalo last week, a slim 2-point favorite. And there were a lot of people that were looking at the line and going, well, that doesn't make a whole heck of a lot of sense. Why would the Colts only be a 2-point road favorite in Buffalo against, well, literally, I mean, let's get it straight, an untested, basically, seriously, I mean, it's a third-string quarterback. Tyrod Taylor is a third-string quarterback. And yet, Buffalo comes out of that a winner, 27-14. There were, as I pointed out right at the top of the program, Brady, there are a couple of upsets that we're going to talk about. But it would seem to me this one's got to be the biggest of the day, isn't it?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, a lot of people have, you know, penciled in the Colts as a Super Bowl team this year. Their performance week one clearly doesn't, you know, show that. So, you know, I don't know that. You know, it's only 1 week, so let's not, you know, get ahead of ourselves. But, you know, looking at the box score, you certainly wouldn't think that this game ended as a, you know, two touchdowns to the Bills. I mean, you know, the box score offensively for Buffalo is actually pretty bland.
I agree.
Mean, Tyrod Taylor, you know, impressive in his completion percentage.
Correct.
But only had 195 yards. You know, no interceptions and one touchdown. So that's all good. And rushing-wise, they spread it out among three guys, but they didn't have, like, an overwhelming rushing. You know, they might have 150 yards rushing combined. So I don't understand, you know, looking at the box score, it doesn't appear to me to be, you know, an automatic loss for the Colts. But, you know, obviously the score is what it is.
Jump over to some of the problems, however, that it's evident, that Indianapolis was dealing with, that the Colts were dealing with. 26 of 49 for Andrew Luck is not exactly the greatest completion percentage there. He had two interceptions as well. Ended up with a QB rating of 63.6. Frank Gore was supposed to be the guy that was going to be carrying the rock, and yet, over four different players, they only amassed 64 yards on the ground. It appears to me the Colts could be walking into, and of course, look, it's early. So I don't want to make blanket statements, and I'll try not to. I don't want to paint with too broad a brush here. But it would appear, at least on the surface for the moment, Indianapolis has not addressed, perhaps maybe properly enough, ground game yet from last year. And that was their problem last year. And it appears that even with the addition of Frank Gore, I mean, look, they got Andrew Luck. Are you kidding me? was the second leading rusher with 20 yards. You know, you can't have Andrew Luck running around. First of all, he's really not a rushing quarterback, in my opinion. He's a pocket quarterback. But they haven't. They're going to have to do something more on the ground, right?
Yeah,
that's
I would think
so.
Is.
Yeah, that's what the problem is.
I think
is.
The problem may actually look, you know, if you look a little deeper, you know, Andrew Luck's passing completions were down, completion
yep.
percentage, as you pointed out. It could be an offensive line issue. They may not be – that may be where the breakdown is on this team. I mean, Frank Gore has proven, you know, he's good. He's a good running back in this league. So I don't know if you can hang it on Frank Gore as maybe as, you know, the offensive line may need some tweaking, you know, for Indianapolis. I believe, you know, most teams, obviously, they'll move guys around, et cetera, but, you know, the Colts, I don't think the line was particularly a strength for them last year. So, you know, I think maybe that's, you know, where their problem lies. They need to get things squared away more on the offensive line before they worry about, you know, something bigger. You know what I mean?
Yeah, agreed. The turnovers, of course, didn't help them as well.
Turnovers never help anyone, really.
Absolutely. I was just looking to see whether there were any actually, I was trying to determine whether there were points off the turnovers. ESPN, you need to provide that stat in your team stats, please. If anybody's listening out from ESPN, provide that. You know, we've got the turnovers. We know that there were three. Two interceptions on the part of Andrew Luck, but then you also had a fumble loss from Philip Dorsett. So we know there were three turnovers. Were there points off those turnovers? See, now that's important because when you get points off the turnover, and let me just take a look down the – no, it does not appear that there were points off the turnover, not on the Buffalo defense anyhow.
Right. Well, could have led to, you know.
Correct. They could have. Right. That's right.
Good field position, et cetera, et cetera.
When
there
you get the points off the turnover,
goals,
yeah, when
right.
you get the points off the turnover, that's where those turnovers are really, really, really going to hurt you. We've seen many, many times in many games over, oh, well, forget it. I mean, you know, how many decades have I been watching NFL football? So what we've seen many times, a team can overcome a bad turnover game. It's not encouraged. Let's put it that way. You don't want to go in there and have to deal with that. But you can overcome that. We did have this game on. We had this game on here at Frat House Sports. But I will be honest, this one was one that was muted, and it was not front and center. We were actually checking out that Rams game, which is going to be the next one that we're going to take a look at. The Bills sit over there in your division, Brandon, and I just want to bring this up here real quick because I'm looking at the line. New England is going to go into Buffalo this weekend.
Yep.
Here we go again. Just like last week, Indianapolis going into Buffalo, a two-point favorite. New England right now is only a one-point favorite. What do you make of that?
Buffalo's clearly getting respect somewhere. I mean, you know, Rex Ryan, for all his bravado, has always been a solid defensive coach. So, you know, that could be the part of it. I mean, the Buffalo defense was sound before Rex got there. So he came in with a pretty good core to start with of defensive players. So, you know, that team can only go upwards with the personnel they had to start. So maybe that's what it is. I mean, maybe it's just that simple that, you know, they think, you know, the odds makers think, and, you know, obviously, you know, where the money falls changes the line. We've seen that. So, you know, maybe it's just a combination of a couple different things that, you know, is leading to that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think yep. Buffalo particularly is, like, super strong at home like other teams, you know, that, you know, you automatically give them an edge like Seattle. I mean, Seattle's known for, you know, pretty much, you know, they're unbeatable at home, except for the Rams. The Rams beat them last year, but you know I think that just has something to do with it. I think they're getting the respect of, you know, having a pretty decent defensive unit.
One of the things that, but nonetheless, and we're going to talk about the Eagles game later on in the program here, because that's number five of the games that we've got highlighted here. But living in the Philadelphia region, as we do here, one of the things that I have heard in the aftermath for the past 2 days of the Eagles' loss to the Atlanta Falcons, one of the things that I have heard from many analysts here in this region is, let's not forget something, Eagles fans. The Eagles lost to a lesser team. Well, you know, with all due respect, I don't know what game those people were watching. I'm not sure I would necessarily say that the Atlanta Falcons were a lesser team. I'm not sure I would say that the Atlanta Falcons are not a good team. But I think that we can say the Buffalo Bills are not a good team. Wouldn't that be fair?
I think you're selling them a little short. I think they finished pretty close to 8-8 last year. You know, their problem has been, historically, at the quarterback position. They haven't had a clear-cut franchise quarterback. You know, now we'll have Tyrod Taylor's new, so we'll have to see. You know, the jury's still out on this one. But, you know, I don't think they were not – let's put it this way. They weren't like a 2-14 team last year. They were, you know, 8-8, 7-9, somewhere in that area. So I don't know that – I don't know that you can say they were a bad team. I always, you know, obviously I'm very biased to the AFC East because I'm a Patriots fan, and I really don't like the Dolphins and the Jets. But the Bills, to me, have always been – I have respect for them because they've always been a solid franchise. I think they've just made, you know, a few poor choices in personnel over the last few years and coaching. You know, maybe, you know, I'm not saying Rex Ryan's, you know, Chan Gailey really probably shouldn't have even been hired to begin with when he was. So, you know, that was just, I don't know. But, you know, they have some good pieces. You know, they have, you know, they got LeSean McCoy in a trade. You know, they have Sammy Watkins as a receiver. So, you know, the Bills are not a team that you look at and say, okay, they don't have pieces. You know, their problem has been, you know, the last few years has been quarterback. So maybe they have the answer now. We don't know. I mean, in one game, you know, he won. He's 1-for-1. So you can't, you know, argue with that per se.
The Buffalo Bills, by the way, last year, and again, very good on your part. Thank you for pointing it out. Bills last year, 9-7. Were actually a game ahead of the Miami Dolphins, who were 8-8. Buffalo Bills were second in the AFC East last year. But as I think, as you point out, what gives everybody the pause with this Buffalo Bills team is, well, who the hell is your quarterback, for gosh sakes? I mean, that's the problem. That's
right.
Where it lies.
Well, right now it's Tyrod Taylor.
Tyrod Taylor.
Can I tell you, I don't think Ryan Fitzpatrick, when he had him, was given – a long enough opportunity. He's shown in other area, other teams. He's done well. He did well in the Texans. What's that?
I'm saying, isn't it something?
Yeah, I mean, he's done well for the Texans. He won, you know, for the Jets last weekend. You know, that could have just been a mistake in personnel that they gave up on him when they did. You know, maybe he just needed another couple years to come into his groove, you know what I mean? I don't know.
I couldn't agree with you more. And look, I mean, he did not have a bad day at all this past weekend. Fitzpatrick, I have always thrown out there as kind of an X-factor guy. He's a really, really – I think he's a steady, I guess you'd have to say – you know, backup quarterback, but really when it comes right down to it, the guy never seems to be a backup. He always seems to be the starter. And he does okay. He holds his own. The guy somehow or another stays employed and doesn't do that badly a job. I mean, you know, for God's sake, Russell, RG3 right now is benched, for God's sakes. And Ryan Fitzpatrick's got a full-time gig. You explain that one. I mean, seriously.
Well, I think Fitzpatrick deserves it.
I agree.
You know, everything I'm reading, though, you know, the Jets are going to continue their dysfunction and bring Geno Smith back when he's ready. They say he's, it looks like he's 1 week away, they say. So, you know, Fitzpatrick can go out there, win game one. Who knows what he does in game two? And they're going to still put Geno Smith in because they're the Jets. That's the, what they do. You know, they just don't make the right choices.
Yeah, let's not forget. I mean, they do have a new coach there. I think he's probably still trying to feel his way. Not 100% certain where to go with it, but
yeah,
I'm surprised.
Todd Bowles. He's defensive.
Yeah, Todd Bowles.
But he's a defensive coach for the most part. So
correct. but you're saying really? I mean, Geno Smith. They're saying already because wasn't the original report that it might have been 4 to 6 weeks?
Well, 4 to 6 weeks from, you know, it happened like week two of preseason, so you're pretty much in the 4-6 week area, you know, after next week. So, I read an article that they said it out at least another week was what they said.
Mm-hmm.
So that just doesn't mean, you know, that it, maybe it'll be two more, who knows. But it sounds like they're, you know, going to go back to him as soon as they, you know, can, which I don't quite understand. Especially if Fitzpatrick makes a case, you know, that he'd be the starter. You know, we'll see. I mean, he has another, you know, he's starting another game this week, so we'll see how he does.
Absolutely. Let's get this call in here. We got a call coming in from New Jersey. New Jersey, thanks for calling Red Zone Blitz. What's on your mind?
Yo, my guru brothers. We got Jersey in the house here, man. I won the game I should have won and lost by 10 in the other leg, which was a scare. Like, hey, if I would have went with St. Louis's defense, I would have won. If I would have played Ebron over Daniels, but who would have thought that? My question is, am I loaded, Lig? You know, I got Cooper, and I've been going with Devontae Adams. Could you start? Normally, you have to start two receivers, and I've been using Bolden as my third, as my wideout, because I've been going D'Angelo Williams, who gave me 17 points, and Hill. And then next week, I get back Le'Veon down in the ball bell, and by week five, I get Foster back. So I'll be on all fires. And here's my dilemma, guys. I picked up Deion Lewis. Now, do I play him as a flex or something? Because my only other receiver, my fourth receiver, is Tyler Locker with Seattle, which is, you know, he's a rookie. He's got a lot of potential, but you don't know what's going on there. So between Devontae Adams, Cooper, and Bolden and Locker, I need two of them as a receiver this week, PPR league. And then the fifth option is Deion Lewis as maybe a flex versus one of the other two receivers we don't use, you know, in a PPR. Any suggestions?
Well, Deion Lewis is not a bad little player. Bolden clearly would be one of your starters.
I would agree, Bolden.
I think of what you ran down there, he's probably one of your most steady, consistent guys of your list. It does sound like you're waiting for some players to get healthy to help your overall team. So, yeah, that was probably a good pickup taking Deion Lewis. I like that pick.
Yeah,
I
dropped Devontae Parker for him, and I said, you know, he could be the Shane Vereen in a PPR game. Like, I don't like him that much, but again, I got D'Angelo Williams and I got Hill as my two starters. So, all right, there's my running backs. You know what I mean?
The only thing you got to watch though with Deion Lewis is, you know how Belichick is. They got LeGarrette Blount coming back, so you may not see as much of Deion Lewis.
Right,
he looked good though. You know, against Pittsburgh in the opener. So,
right. And against Buffalo, I don't know how they are against the pass. Now, they say Brady, because I have Brady as my quarterback, usually does very well against them in Orchard Park.
Ooh.
So I don't know.
With due respect, I don't know. Brandon, correct me if I'm wrong. There have been many, many nail-biting games you and I have sat through between the Buffalo Bills and the New England Patriots. Many, many nail-biting games.
There's just as many complete blowouts too with those two teams. So
there's been some 30-28 games, you know, 28-24 is where there's been some scoring on both ends. Yeah, because I remember having guys over the years watching some of them.
Yeah,
so that's because what I also did is I picked up. So I have Jimmy Graham. I picked up Jordan Hill as my bye week guy. I got rid of Blue. Blue stinks, man. Blue was a plotter last year. Didn't do anything for me. So I figured, let me grab guys now that I know I can, so I'm loaded with what to think. So, you know, now, because they're saying, first of all, you watch some of the stuff today on the NFL, the different channel, they're saying, oh, man, Cooper's got a tough matchup this week against Baltimore. I don't know. Now, they got a quarterback issue. Now, Devontae Adams is going against Seattle. But you know, Shermer could be on Jones, Shermer could be on Cobb, Shermer could be on Adams. Who knows what's going on there, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So the matchups for my two young receivers aren't as good. But you keep Bolden going against Pittsburgh, I mean, as my slot guy and still keep the other two guys in there and sit Deion Lewis as a flex or any suggestions? Because I do have Cooper hit. I got Cooper, Adams, Bolden, and Locker. So two of them I would need as a receiver out of the four. And then one of those two remaining could be my flex, or I could use Deion Lewis as a flex. So
I don't know about – yeah, I don't know about you, Brandon, but I Bolden's starting on my team.
Yeah, I would go with Bolden and Cooper, and then I would try to keep – until we see otherwise, you know, after, you know, the amount of work Deion Lewis got for the Patriots last week, you know, it looks like it's going to continue. He could end up being that third down back like a Shane Vereen or a Kevin Falk was for them for many years. So, you know, that person in that role has always been productive. You know, they're always in around the red zone. They're always catching little screens. So, you know, you could get, you know, a little bump from him in that capacity.
So you use Cooper, Amari Cooper as the odd man out. So you would go with like Bolden as a receiver. You would go with Devontae Adams as a receiver, and then maybe sneak in Lewis as my flex. I mean, I hate to be too.
Why not put Cooper in as a flex?
Oh, okay. Yeah, because it could go either way. It's the same points no matter what. Yeah, I could do that. Right now I got Cooper and Woodfeld as my receivers, and Bolden is my flex.
You know, I mean, you need
a running back or a receiver. Okay. So I'm basically going to keep my lineup the same as what I did last week, pretty much.
There you go. You're just kind of shuffling around the positions. Right, exactly.
I'm just putting St. Louis' defense in, and I'm taking Carolina. Carolina did well for me. It actually won. It gave me 26 points. That was one of the things that helped me out, too. Another question. I'm being smart, my guys. You'll love this. Here's my dilemma. I lost 93-83, so I get the second pick this week in my standard league. So I've been going Lacy and Gordon as my running backs. Gordon killed me. I have on my bench. I have Joyce Bell. I have Ryan Matthews. What I'm going to do is I'm going to pick up Ronnie Hillman today. I got him from the bucket. Because what's going to happen is C.J. Anderson is banged up. So if C.J. Anderson doesn't go, I mean, do you plug in Hillman and Gordon's spot? Lacy's a no-brainer. I'm going to do that. What's your thinking on that?
Brandon, what's the word on that? I hadn't heard that Anderson was banged up.
He's either.
He's got a toe issue. He hasn't practiced much this week. He didn't do Monday, a little bit Tuesday, a little bit today. He's a game-time decision, C.J. Anderson.
Well, here's the thing. If you watch the game last week, they both got some playing time anyway. So
yeah.
If Anderson is at all banged up, Hillman's going to see some more time. It's not like he was, you know, relegated to no touches. So Hillman's not a bad choice.
12 touches each. I think Hillman got 49 yards. C.J. Anderson got 21 yards. They both got 12 touches each.
That's cool.
Well, clearly,
yeah, I would go. That's a good
clearly,
pickup.
Agreed. If in fact, Anderson, although I'm going to be honest, I'm surprised I haven't gotten that word. I follow Mile High Huddle. You know, they're one of my blog sites that I follow very, very closely, and we know all the writers over there. And I have not read anywhere that there is an issue with Anderson this week. Interesting. I mean, I'm not disputing you there, Jersey. I'm just saying that I don't know. I haven't heard.
Yeah, because I knew it was heard during the game, they said. And he didn't practice. I've been looking at a couple different sites just to see what's going on with him because I'm looking to pick him up today and stash him on there. I'm going to get rid of Devontae Parker, you know, for him.
If you've got room on your roster, go pick him up.
Yeah, I just thought to drop Devontae Parker. Right now, he's the odd man out with that team. Still, he's young. And I already got enough young receivers. I got to keep some veteran in there, you know what I mean? And then what I'm going to do, I'm going to drop Daniels and pick up Heath Miller. Terrence Williams available, but I got enough receivers. And Terrence Williams may not stud much now that Des Bryant's gone because Williams gets the number one coverage on him. You know what I mean?
What's your thinking on picking up Miller? Why are you picking up Miller over Daniels?
I was going to pick up Heath Miller over Owen Daniels because Owen Daniels got a quarterback that can't throw past 10 yards and doesn't even throw to him. He only threw one time, though.
Uh, listen. Sit tight. Give Peyton a week or two yet.
Okay.
I'm telling you.
I'm going to start Ebron this week. I would have never thought Ebron would have went off.
I'm not. I've never been a Heath Miller fan. I've said that before. I'll say it again. I'm not a Heath Miller fan. I think the guy's just about. I think I mentioned that to you last week, actually, Jersey.
Right, you did. I remember you did. I think.
Yep.
I'll keep that in mind. So if
right.
Evans, if Evans is available to go for me, I'm going to have Evans in there. I sat him last week because he was out. My other option for number two, because I go with two receivers. I'll put Evans in. I got Roddy White, Devontae Adams. I have Steve Johnson, because I'm not going to have Devontae Parker. But Steve Johnson is going against Cincinnati, who could be tough. Adams is going against Seattle. So Roddy White basically has the Giants. It is an easier thing. And if Evans is healthy, he's going against New Orleans, he could give me some stuff. So do you still like Roddy White as my RW2, sitting Adams and sitting Steve Johnson?
Against the Giants, you bet your life. The Giants
play
have got
Roddy White then, okay.
The Giants have got no defense. There's no defense with the Giants.
Yeah, I saw that game. I can't believe they went down a field on the score with like 13 seconds left right to win. I'm like, you kidding me?
You know, Rick, keep in mind, this is a game up in New York. And yet the Giants are only a 2-point favorite. Atlanta was in, I'm telling you, Matt Ryan was ridiculous the other night against the Eagles. Absolutely ridiculous.
Oh, I watched it. I couldn't believe it. The Eagles defense could get no pressure on them. And then the Atlanta's defense beat the crap out of Bradford, beat the crap out of them. And, like, it was like two different teams. That's why Chip, we do not trust. You know, you say God we trust. Well, Chip, we do not trust because he is clueless. And you got to play these guys in the preseason. They worry about getting hurt. They got no time. And why is he throwing a huff? He didn't throw a huff all year. Hurts, I can understand because he's normally a starter, but he didn't get no playing time. That line looked bad. They couldn't run the ball. I'll tell you what, man, I'm glad I don't have any Eagles on my team because that defense, they're pretenders in the preseason when the real thing came. The true hats came out, and that Byron Maxwell, where his dude's name is, the quarterback?
Yeah.
So, like I say, guys, I appreciate everything you've done. I appreciate the advice here. Now, my other last thing is I'm starting Ryan in my one leg, which I have to, because I have Eli in both. And I guess I'm going to start Brady against Buffalo because, again, you know, I don't know what kind of defense Atlanta's going to be at on the road, but I'll tell you what, they tore through Philly, and the Giants' offensive line got some issues too, you know what I mean? So they got argument between Jennings and the coach and, well, I'm supposed to not go in for a touchdown stuff, so they've got a little dysfunction now, so I'm kind of staying away from some of their stuff. But, again, thank you for helping me tweak my stuff, guys. I appreciate it. I'll probably get back to you on Thursday with Junior's team. So I appreciate everything, guys, and best of luck to you. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, Jersey.
Take care, man.
You too.
Yep, bye-bye.
Jersey in the house right there, baby. Boy, when that guy gets on.
Yeah, man.
Yeah,
he's
man.
He's into his fantasy.
Boy,
that's
is
for
he
sure.
ever. Is he
ever. Yeah, in a good way.
Nothing wrong with it, man. No, absolutely nothing wrong with that. We're, you know, the guy could host his own show. I'm wondering why he calls around others. Let's do this. Let's jump over and take a look at that. Let's take a look at that Rams and Seattle Seahawks game here real quick. We've known for a while now that the Rams, somehow or another, over the past, I guess, year and a half, season and a half, seem to somehow or another just have Seattle's number. And it doesn't seem to matter whether the game is in St. Louis or it's in Seattle. The Rams just seem to have their number. Boy, was this a good game the other day. This was a nail-biter. Went to overtime. Seattle had to come all the way back. At one point, let me just look at this. 24, it was 24-13. 24-13, Seattle. Or St. Louis, rather, had the lead going into the fourth quarter. Seattle had to put 18 points on the board in the fourth. It went back and forth and back and forth, back and forth. Russell Wilson put the ball in the air 41 times. Now, one of the things that I had pointed out, and I forget on which program it was, but it might have been actually on the Saturday program because I had a lot of extra time on the Saturday program. One of the things I pointed out was that I anticipated that we were going to see a different-looking Seattle team, that you were going to see a more aerial team from Seattle. Of course, with the addition now of Jimmy Graham, and that they were going to get the receivers into the flow a little bit more. And in fact, that's exactly what we saw. You know, if you remember, Brandon, this was a team back during the playoffs last year. Everybody was sitting around going, oh, come on. They're a running team. That's all they are. They don't have any – they don't have – you know, they're one-dimensional. That's all they are. They're a ground game. They're very beatable because they don't have an aerial attack. 251 yards in the air is what Russell Wilson had. 32 of 41. Very, very good numbers. One touchdown, one interception, and a 90.1 QB rating. They certainly answered that complaint, didn't they?
Yeah. I'm not understanding. What do you mean the complaint? I'm not quite sure.
The complaint was Seattle did not have an aerial game.
They were nothing but a
ground game. They had Marshawn Lynch and they had Russell Wilson. That was the complaint going into the playoffs from many, many, fans who sat back looking at the Seattle Seahawks, saying it's a one-dimensional team. For the vast majority, I remember us going through this on some of the football programs that we did last year. People couldn't even name one wide receiver, the Seattle Seahawks, because nobody knew who they were. Because Russell Wilson didn't throw the ball. He threw it on Sunday 41 times.
Yeah, that is a philosophy.
You're not kidding. You are not kidding. Now, over on the other side, St. Louis comes out. It's a new-look St. Louis. It's the Nick Foles-led St. Louis. 18 of 27, respectable. Touchdown. Okay. 297 yards in the air. Okay, it's the Nick Foles that I think that we all knew here in Philadelphia. Just steady, right?
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think I how I feel about Nick Foles. I've said it over and over again that I like him. I like the way he plays the game, and I think he's going to be a solid quarterback. You know, and can't argue with the week one results. I mean, they beat Seattle, who was the defending NFC, you know, conference champion. That's pretty impressive. And, and you know, I think he might be the piece they needed, you know, to take the next step. I mean, that defense has always been solid under Jeff Fisher. He's built a nice defense. I mean, they have a couple pieces on offense with Tavon Austin as the, you know, a receiver, shown some signs. Kenny Britt had a decent year last year. Now, looking at the numbers, you would know it this week, you know, that they weren't the key players, but, you know, they have others. And I think Nick Foles is going to turn out to be, you know, a great addition for the Rams. That's just my opinion. I mean, you know, he's had solid numbers throughout his career, doesn't turn the ball over a lot. And I think Eagles might have just, you know, I don't necessarily think they did themselves favor. But that's all I can say about that.
What do you make of this Benny Cunningham? You know, look at the numbers that Benny Cunningham put up there, not only on the ground, but also in the air. 45 yards on the ground on 16 carries, another 77 yards in the air on four receptions. Cunningham, prior to this, had only started two games in three seasons for St. Louis. This guy might be the new secret weapon over there at the Rams, huh?
Yeah, it could be. I mean, they have their number one overall pick waiting in the wings. The name is escaping me at the moment, but he was drafted coming off an injury, so they knew he wasn't going to be available week one. But I, you know, Cunningham's going to be a nice piece, you know, when they do get, you know, this other their other running back back. That's for sure.
I think it bodes well for the Rams. Some people right now are saying this is clearly evidence of the fact that Seattle is probably going to take a step backward this year. Any thoughts on that one? Too early to tell, isn't it? Way too early to tell.
No, I don't think so. I thought that was my preseason hunch on Seattle, that they were going to take a step back. As a matter of fact, I think we actually brought it up on our NFL Roundtable show earlier this year. I think we had kind of addressed it. They're kind of in a little disarray. You know, they lost some key players on defense. They lost two members of their vaunted secondary. You know, Cam Chancellor's holding out, so there's a third member gone, you know, the defense. So, you know, and Seattle, you know, Marshawn Lynch, for all he is another year older, keeps hinting at retiring. So, you know, he might be feeling, you know, a little mileage, I guess. You know, as you pointed out, you know, they haven't had a great aerial attack. They did add Jimmy Graham, who, I guess if you look at his numbers, had a solid day. I mean, he scored a touchdown, you know, 6 catches, 51 yards and a touchdown. I mean, it's not great, but it's not awful. So, you know, maybe he'll evolve as, you know, a weapon and you know, keep Seattle viable. But I don't see them, you know, being as dominant as they were, and they're playing in a tough, tough division. I mean, Arizona's still a good team. St. Louis is clearly improving. And I'll tell you what, the 49ers surprised a lot of people, I think, on Monday night, you know, by coming out there and throttling the Vikings. I don't think anybody expected that. So mm-hmm. I certainly didn't. I mean, I thought the Vikings, I thought San Francisco, you know, with all their problems, I thought, you know, they need to retool. They come out 20-3 against the Vikings, who, you know, are a team that, you know, was looking really good last year, you know, and everybody's expecting them to take another step forward this year. So, you know, like, we shouldn't get too ahead of ourselves. It is just week one.
Absolutely.
But, you know,
absolutely agree.
You're talking about Seattle, you know, you got to look at their division, and their division has been the cream of the crop. So we'll see how they do throughout the year for sure.
We had just talked a little bit ago there about teams coming back or, you know, from the adversity of turnovers. St. Louis might have been a good example. Three turnovers in the game. Two fumbles lost by Nick Foles, one by Isaiah Pede, and yet they won the game by 3 points in overtime. 34-31, St. Louis won the game. Great game, I'm going to tell you right now. Went back and forth, and it really was a very, very good and fun game to sit around and watch. We are, I guess, about halfway through here, our season inaugural return of Frat House Sports' Red Zone Blitz program, where we're taking a look at, some of the key games that took place this past weekend, and we're taking your calls, 347-826-9964. Is how you can get in with us, please. Don't hesitate, just like Jersey and the House did there. 347-826-9964. You can give us a call. Chat us up about anything on your mind with regard to your team or any game or matchup coming up. Be more than happy to take it. If you're listening on a computer and you are Skype capable, hit that little Skype button there, and hopefully it'll put you through to us loud and clear. Otherwise, leave us a message in the chat room. Or hit me up over on Twitter, at FratHouseMike. Brandon, we had highlighted it on last Thursday's Frat House Sports Show. I don't know whether we actually got to it in the program, I'll be perfectly honest, because, that show just got so completely fouled up. I'm not sure whether we all got our picks in, but one of the games that we had highlighted was the game between two first-round draft pick quarterbacks with the Tennessee Titans and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And, that one's on our list here for this evening to take a look at as well here. Tennessee beat Tampa Bay 42-14. Marcus Mariota, 13 of 16. Talk about precision and efficiency. 13 of 16, 4 touchdowns, a 158.3 QB rating. FYI, from what I understand, 158.3 is perfect. That's a perfect QB rating.
That it is.
This was absolute insanity. Kendall Wright, 4 receptions, 101 yards. Delanie Walker, 3 receptions, 43 yards and a touchdown. Kendall Wright had a touchdown. Harry Douglas, 2 for 24 and a touchdown. I mean, 209 yards in the air. It didn't need a heck of a lot. You know, 209 yards for any other quarterback is passe and mediocre. That's mediocre. And, for a lot of other quarterbacks, that might even mean that you, with a touchdown and 2 interceptions. Mariota, 4 touchdowns, no INTs. Just a absolutely dominant performance against Jameis Winston, 16 of 33. Winston was 210 yards. So he actually had a yard more than Marcus Mariota. 2 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. Positively dominant. Now, I guess what we have to do is we have to couch it on 2 things. Number one, we'll do it this way. Let's start here. First, it's early. Second, these are 2 teams that were at the bottom, both of them, respectively, in the bottom of the NFL. So we couch it that way, right, Brendan? I mean, there's...
Yes and no. I mean, you got to consider, you know, the preseason. Mariota looked awesome in the preseason. So, you know, I don't know that you can totally discount just because Tampa, you know, was a bottom team last year. Tampa had a decent defense. Lovie Smith, the head coach, is a defensive coach. They have improved it even more. So, you know, I don't know that I dismiss it as just being bottom teams. Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, I don't know. I think Mariota could be the real deal. I think he's going to be a solid quarterback in the NFL. I'm really looking forward to seeing more of the games this year. I mean, you know, with him for sure. I know you are, because I know you got him stashed on your bench in fantasy. So, you know.
Yeah, and I sit here after having had Peyton in the game last week. And I sit going, okay, well, wait a minute. Do I sneak Tennessee into a game at Cleveland? Because that's where we're going. Tennessee's going to Cleveland. Tennessee is a 1-point favorite on the road at the Cleveland Browns. So do I sneak him in there, you know, on the whim and a prayer that, well, last week what we saw is just going to continue? I don't know. I mean, like you, I mean, that's the whole thing. You know, I guess in some respects, what us old timers have a tendency to do is we have a tendency to sit back and go, oh, come on, it's too good to be true. It's too good. Oh, it's going to end. It can't be like that. That's just, that was a fluke. That's where we're at, right? I mean, that's, I don't know. I got to say, we had this game going here at Frat House Sports, and it was truly, truly impressive to watch Mariota go to work. I mean, it really was. There was absolutely no apprehension from him whatsoever. He seemed to be in complete control of almost every aspect of the game, complete control of the team, knew exactly what he was doing. And that's just, I'm sorry, that's scary. That is just scary. Because
for game one, that absolutely would definitely raise some eyebrows. I mean, let's just face it. You know, Peyton Manning, you were talking about, you know, he had a pretty rough rookie season. I believe he was 1-15, you know, and, you know, Mariota's already got the 1, you know, so, you know, he's already off to a pretty good start. It's definitely going to be interesting to see how he continues throughout the season for sure.
Yeah, and when you take a look at some others that we have seen recently that have come into the league, youngsters, and in particular, I guess I can point to somebody like a Geno Smith. And we saw our fair share of Geno Smith. And I have consistently stated, and look, I'm on record, and I'll state it even here right now. I don't know whether Geno Smith is a good quarterback or a bad quarterback. I have no idea. I'm not sure that Geno Smith is with the right team right yet. It may be that Geno Smith needs to have a complete change of scenery. But here's the bottom line, and Brandon, I think you might agree with this. In just about every single game I have ever seen Geno Smith, the guy just doesn't look comfortable. And for gosh sakes, we're into what, year three? He's into year three, I believe, right?
I think this is starting year three, yeah.
And he just doesn't look comfortable. You know, he drops back into the pocket. He looks scared. You know, the feet are moving all over the place. It looks like he's dancing around. It looks like he doesn't know where to go. You know, I don't know. It just, and yet you don't see any of those kinds of things, or at least we didn't last Sunday. We didn't see any of those kinds of things from Marcus Mariota at all. You saw a guy that was truly, you know, and I know that the line is kind of a cliche and perhaps maybe even a bit overused, but boy, he just came out and he was a surgeon, absolutely surgical in the way that he maneuvered this team around. It was incredible, absolutely incredible. Good game. And like you, Brendan, I agree with you. I'm looking forward to seeing many more Tennessee Titan games and seeing whether this kid's the real deal or not, for sure. Let's see here. Let me get over to, we're going to go take a look at that Denver Broncos game. Let's go take a look at that Denver Broncos game. Denver and the Baltimore Ravens. Denver ended up winning at 19-13. In what was, for the average viewer, probably a rather boring game. However, if you are a Broncos fan or you are rooting for, have a fantasy interest, as I do, with Peyton Manning, you're sitting there biting your nails. So it was one or the other. In other words, you're not tuning into this game unless, I guess, basically you had a fantasy interest, because it really was kind of almost deadly dull. Peyton ended up putting the ball in the air 40 times, 25 of 40, 175 yards. Are you kidding me? 175 yards. That's a 4.4 average. No touchdowns, one interception, a 59.9 QB rating. Joe Flacco, on the other hand, well, I don't know. I guess the completion percentage, no, actually it wasn't quite even as good. No, I guess it was about the same. 18 of 32, 117 yards, 3.7 average for Flacco. No touchdowns, two interceptions, 38.2 QB rating. I honest to God, that couldn't be scripted. On any other day, both those quarterbacks are coming out and they're having incredible days. Who'd have thunk you could get those two quarterbacks on the same field of play and have that bad a performance from both of them? That just doesn't happen.
It could be a testament to defense. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm grasping at straws.
Well, Aqib Talib was given what? He was defensive player of the AFC today? I think he was named.
Aqib Talib was.
Defensive player for the AFC, I believe, not for the NFL, but for the AFC. All right, that's possible. I mean, Baltimore's known for, let's see, I'm just looking at the numbers. Baltimore hit Peyton five times. They also had a pick six. They had a pick six. We knew that one, right? That one interception from Peyton actually was a pick six, so that helped their defense out a bit. I hear you. But, this was a tough game.
It's a definition of winning ugly, because, you know, that's basically what the Broncos did. They didn't do well in any aspect of the game, short of defense. I guess on defense they played pretty well. I mean, you know, with Talib winning AFC Defensive Player of the Week, I mean, you got to be doing something right on defense for that to happen. So, you know, that's parts all right. But, you know, offensively, you know, they didn't do anything really on the ground. I mean, between Hillman and Anderson, they had 24 carries for a whopping 80 yards. That's not that good. Mm-hmm. So they weren't running the ball. Peyton didn't get any yardage in the air, as you pointed out. His completion percentage ain't the greatest in the pick. So, you know, they need to fix some things, that's for sure.
Yeah, there's no doubt about
but,
it.
You know, as we said, it's week one. So let's not, I wouldn't get too worried just yet. And it is, you gotta remember, it's a new offense for Peyton. They had a complete coaching staff change out there. So, you know, now we're running Gary Kubiak's system as opposed to Adam Graves. So, you know, he may need a week or two or three to kind of hit his groove, as they say. And you know me, I'm not the biggest Peyton Manning fan, but I wouldn't bail on him just yet.
Okay.
You know, let's put it this way. I don't think Peyton Manning's going to go out without a fight. He doesn't strike me as that type of player. He will fight. Not saying, you know, he comes up big in big games, as I've contended for a long time. You know, when the big games come around, that's usually when he falls over. But you got, you know, the regular season, a long way to go. So, you know, like I said, I a lot of people are seeing this as potentially his last season. I don't think
right.
he wants to end that way. You
right.
know what I mean?
Well, and you're answering the next question I was going to have to you. You're answering my follow-up. My follow-up to you was going to be, you know, I've heard a lot of speculation this week from some of the national pundits that Peyton's got dead arm. You know, Peyton's, you know, this is it. It was clearly evident that he's got nothing left in the tank. Well, I don't know. Can you make that comparison when, as I just pointed out, the guy that was playing on the opposite side of the ball from him, Joe Flacco, had just about the same completion percentage, fewer yards, and a worse QB rating? I mean, seriously, you could almost make the same case for Joe Flacco, couldn't you?
Well,
I mean,
I think Joe Flacco is a few years younger.
Well, yeah, for sure. No, I understand.
You got to put that into context.
Right. I guess my point is, if you do the apples to apples, you can't make the comparison. What people are basing this upon, and this is one of the things that my guys over at Mile High Huddle, and folks, get over there and check out that website. We just had Jake Marsing on the other week right here on our Fred Al Sports Radio Network, milehighhuddle.com. If you're somebody interested in the Denver Broncos. One of the things that they pointed out to me this week in some conversations that I had with both Chad Jensen and Jake Morrison this week was the problem that the American sports fan has, the American football sports fan has with what they saw from Peyton Manning is that it was so un-Peyton-like. That we're used to seeing, you know, the aerial explosion, you know, this ripping the field apart, you know, the precision, what the kind of thing that we've seen, I guess, for the past three seasons, and what we saw was a lot of what we saw at the end of last season, and that's what people were comparing it to. You're not doing the comparison of his numbers to Joe Flacco. You're making the comparison of Peyton Manning at the beginning of 2015 to Peyton Manning from 2013. And they're saying you can't do that. You can't do that for a couple of reasons. And those reasons that they gave to me were exactly what you just pointed out, Brandon. Number one, it's an older Peyton. Number two, it's a different offensive scheme completely. So,
well, plus you have some different players too. I mean, you got Owen Daniels as a primary tight end now instead of Julius Thomas. No Wes Welker. Not that Wes Welker was that big of a, you know, a factor last year. You know, so you gotta plug in your different players here, you know, and see what you got. You know, not only a new offense, you got different cast of characters that Peyton's throwing to. So it might take him, you know, some game action to get comfortable with an Owen Daniels kind of thing. I think Owen Daniels is going to have a big year. I mean, I drafted him in fantasy. So, you know, clearly I think he's going to be all right. And I think he will because he's been productive. You know, he was really productive for the Texans. I'm surprised they actually let him go. But anyway, I think him and Peyton will get a repertoire or between them. I think they'll do just fine. It's just going to – it may take a few games. You may see the Broncos struggle for the first two or three, but they already, you know, they struggled mightily in this game and came out with a win. You can't really argue. If you're a Broncos fan, you got to be happy. You know, this was a growing pains game, and you survive, essentially. So, you know, I think they just build on that from here.
There you go. We got about 30 minutes here remaining in this evening's Red Zone Blitz program. Coming back at you for the first time in the 2015 season. If anybody out there has anything you want to contribute to the program, please don't hesitate. 347-826-9964. Get on the cell phone, get on the landline, give us a holler. 347-826-9964. Otherwise, leave us up a message in the chat room or hit me up over on Twitter at Frat House Mike. At Frat House Mike. Okay, let's go take a look at a game that was kind of dear to my heart. Well, I won't say dear to my heart. I'll say near to my heart. How about near to my heart? Near to my heart, the Atlanta Falcons held on to win against a visiting Philadelphia Eagles team, 26-24. Philadelphia Eagles were a two-point favorite going into Atlanta, ended up losing by two on Monday Night Football. There was a lot of hype, Brandon. You know it. You heard it here along with me. I've been guarded about all the hype. I'm not drinking the Kool-Aid on the whole thing. I haven't in the two previous seasons under Chip Kelly. Brand new quarterback for the Philadelphia Eagles, Sam Bradford. Everybody's gone nuts. They saw 17 snaps from the guy in preseason, and they suddenly, many people in this area had suddenly pronounced him to be the next Joe Montana. So much talk about this ground game that the Philadelphia Eagles had built in the offseason. Three-headed monster, DeMarco Murray, Ryan Matthews, Darren Sproles. Philadelphia Eagles go into Atlanta. They end up putting the ball in the air 52 times on the legs of a guy that has been down for, how many games? He's only played seven games, I think, in 2 years because of ACLs. Put the ball in the air 52 times. And ended up with 63 yards on the ground between the three-headed monster. What in the world is going on with this nonsense? This looked like an Andy Reid game. I'm not joking. This looked like an Andy Reid game. Go ahead.
Well, here's some positives to take out of it. Take away Sam Bradford's two interceptions, and his numbers aren't bad. I mean, 36 of 52. Now, if you take out the two interceptions, it'd be two less. His completion percentage isn't horrible. 336 yards and a touchdown. So they clearly could move the ball. The biggest problem with this game was the Eagles kept committing too many penalties, and they kept shooting themselves in the foot when they were on offense. Every time they moved the ball, it'd be holding. Or every time they moved the ball, it would be, you know, illegal formation. You know, it was one thing after the next, and you can't win games when you're hurting yourself, especially a tight game as this one was. So, you know, there's a lot it's, again, week one. There are some positives for the Eagles. I would be concerned at the lack of running game. I mean, really, Murray and Matthews from out of the backfield essentially were shut down. Sproles had a decent, you know, line for his five carries. Oh. Jordan Matthews looked great out of the back, receiving. So, or is it Josh Matthews?
Jordan.
All right. I always get confused. Anyway, they had, what's his name? Ryan Matthews caught a few out of the backfield. So, you know, they had some positives. Sproles, you know, had a great game. If you add up, he had over 100 yards combined. So, you know, I think the Eagles are going to be okay. I think they need to fix some things on defense. Yeah, Maxwell clearly had a horrible game in his debut for the Eagles. So they need to, you know, tighten some things up. Even Chip Kelly said in one of his press conferences after the game that Maxwell's problem was all technique, that it could be corrected. So, you know, if that's the case, I can accept it. And, you know, we'll see how things play out, you know, this week.
Yeah, I guess we will. there was one other thing I was going to mention that I would take. Oh, there was the observation that I had made during the course of the game, and I think you heard me as well, that there was evidence at times to me that Chip Kelly, despite his firm backup about time of possession doesn't mean anything, there were times that it appeared to me that he was trying to slow his game down. In other words, cognizant of the fact that potentially, hey, if you have your defense out there, you know, as much as they did last year, you're going to wear the defense out. So I took a little bit of consolation from that. There were some people that are, just crying up a storm about the Cody Parkey miss. I think that's what, and I forget what the number was I heard. Six misses in seven games. That's, you know, I don't know if that's, I'd have to look up those numbers to be certain on that one. Jump over though real quick and take a look at the Atlanta numbers, because this is an Atlanta team that many have been touting as a team that's going to make a roaring comeback in the NFC South and look for them to potentially run away with the South. Well, and that might be very well the case, considering the performance that we saw from the New Orleans Saints, who I kind of thought might be the best down there in the South this season. But what did you take away from Atlanta? You got a brand new head coach, and for them to come in their first game, of course, now mind you, it was at home. It was in Atlanta. You're in a dome. It was loud. It was Monday night. They had all the right ingredients. But boy, nonetheless, I mean, it really was impressive. Julio Jones was just insane. Roddy White was on fire with four receptions of his own for 84 yards. What do you got there? You got 220 yards between the two of those guys on the ground and two touchdowns. Just insane. If you can keep both of them healthy, for gosh sakes, Matt Ryan might be back, huh?
Well, especially playing in a weak NFC South division of two. I mean, you know, you got teams like the Buccaneers, and the Panthers were a playoff team last year, but they're not, you know, a juggernaut by any stretch of the imagination. So, you know, they clearly have, and the Saints, you know, who knows what they're going to do. That team, you can't figure out anymore. So, yeah, the Falcons are in a good position. And yeah, Matty Ice could be back. You know, I don't think he was ever gone, per se. It's hard to nail down what the Falcons' problem is. I mean, last year it seemed to be a running game. This year,
yep.
Well, it looks pretty balanced. I mean, they didn't set the world on fire on the ground, but they, between two guys, they had over 100 yards. And
that's,
or just
more than
short
we've
of 100
seen.
Yards.
Yeah, that's more than we've seen. That's more than we see normally, I think, in the past, what, three seasons? I think that's above their average.
It's an improvement. And, you know, if Julio Jones and Roddy White are both healthy all year, yeah, they're going to be on. They're probably the best 1-2 combo in the league right now. I think the Falcons are going to be okay. The other thing you got to remember is, you know, the Eagles had 10 penalties. You know, that's always going to help the team on the other side. You know, when you have a team, you know, shooting themselves in the foot, making penalty after penalty and mistake after mistake, that also could probably, you know, be indicative of the slowdown on Chip Kelly's offense. You know, if you're constantly, I think most of those, I would venture a guess, just from the feeling I get from watching the game, I think at least 8 of those were offensive penalties.
Offensive penalties, yep.
Yeah, they were killing themselves. So that would slow down the flow as well, too. But, you know, you say the Falcons are recipients. Yeah, everything was lined up for them. You know, like you said, they're home in a loud dome. You know, Monday Night Football, opening game, you know, of the year. You know, and the team on the other side of the ball is making mistake after mistake. So, yeah, everything lined up well for the Falcons. But these two teams meet again. I think the opposite's going to happen.
It could be a different outcome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could be. So, you know.
It could be.
Chip Kelly's got to be preaching, you know, penalty in practice this week, you know, and he's got to be keeping people from making mistakes, et cetera, et cetera. So,
interestingly, I heard mixed reviews on Sam Bradford. I was kind of surprised to hear the mixed reviews I did hear on Sam Bradford. I was hearing things like he looked scared, he looked anxious, he looked like he didn't quite know where he was going. What's the word I want? Indecisive. Brandon, I made the observation during the game, and you kind of chimed in right with me along with it. I completely disagree. The guy looked poised to me. He looked like he wasn't rattled at all by just about anything. There were numerous times you could see the pocket collapsing in around him, and he stood right in there and made the throw and frequently made the connection. Now, he was hit and hit hard a couple of times. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. I was actually glad to see him get hit and hit hard and be able to get. So, I don't know what people were, what the complaints were. He was hit actually 8 times, according to the box score. He took a couple good ones, too. Yeah, he did. Now, he wasn't sacked. So he wasn't sacked at all. So, you know, that to me shows good poise. In other words, I'm going to stand in the pocket, and I know when I'm going to have to get rid of this, and not take the loss. But I thought he looked actually very, very good, and pretty darn precise when he was putting it in the air. I think you agreed with me on that one, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. You know what? Look at it like this. This was, as we said, Sam Bradford's first live game. Short of the preseason, which we all know is diluted, in what, almost 2 seasons? Give him a game or two to shake off the rust. You know, you can't judge much by preseason. They don't play a whole game. You know, as a matter of fact, I think Sam Bradford actually looked better as the game progressed than he did to start the game. So, you know, I wouldn't be worried just yet. I think Sam Bradford's going to be okay. He looks pretty good in this offense. They definitely need to get more out of the running game to help Sam. I think that will help Sam. Bradford. I don't think Bradford needs to be putting up 52 passes every week. Maybe that's just my opinion. But, you know, you tout all offseason, we got the three-headed monster running back, and they, you know, what do? Nothing. A big letdown. So that's got to improve. They got to get a rushing game going, established, and cut down the mistakes, and that will all help Sam Bradford and make Bradford a better quarterback. I don't think his numbers look bad. I don't think he looked bad in the game. Yeah, he threw 2 interceptions. Okay, you're going to have that from time to time. You know, quarterbacks, you know, everybody, they all throw them eventually. So, you know, shake it off, move on. I think he looked pretty good, to be honest with you. I totally agree with you as far as the way he looked in the game.
Let's jump around, and we'll do a couple of real quick hits because we've only got about 15 minutes remaining here this evening. We'll do a couple of quick hits here. We won't go real deep into any of these. I just want to kind of bring them up and get your thoughts on them. Arizona Cardinals 31, New Orleans Saints 19. I frankly thought that New Orleans was going to come out, look a bit stronger than they did. If I'm not mistaken, New Orleans, I think, was on the road. Were they on the road in that game? Yes, they were. And Arizona was only a 2.5-point favorite. I kind of thought they were going to look a little stronger. In fact, I thought that Arizona completely manhandled them. Arizona looked strong. Arizona looked very, very good. Carson Palmer, I thought, was very, very precise and looked quite good. 19 of 32, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. A 122.8 QB rating, throwing an average of 9.6 yards per attempt. What do you take away from, I guess, really less, more interested in what you're thinking was on what do you take away from the New Orleans game? I think we've all pretty much said around here, Arizona, boy, they certainly do appear to have the right ingredients to potentially maybe be the winners of the NFC West. I guess the question is, what did you take away from the New Orleans game? What did you think of them?
Well, they clearly are looking older. Drew Brees is looking a little older. Colston looks really aged.
Yep.
They don't have the weapons they used to have. You know, I don't know if getting rid of Jimmy Graham was their best decision. He was pretty productive in their offense. Their running backs didn't seem to do a whole lot, you know, at least out of the backfield. They seemed to have pretty good numbers, you know, passing-wise. That seemed to be the only, you know, thing that was working for Brees was throwing to the backs out of the backfield. The only drawback I saw from the Cardinals side was, you know, how bad is Ellington banged up? You know, he left the game on a cart with a knee injury. I have not seen anything all week as to, you know, the outcome of that. So, you know, that'll be interesting because Ellington's a big part of the Cardinals, you know, rushing attack. Now, they do have Chris Johnson, who they signed, and he got a few carries and didn't look too bad. So they may be okay. They may actually have an adequate, you know, backup this year, unlike last year when Ellington was dinged up for a little bit. So, you know, that's pretty much where it looks. I think New Orleans is going to continue to struggle. I don't think they're going to have an easy go of it. The only thing that may get them a few wins is the division they're in, you know?
Yeah.
Although you never know. I think the Falcons are a better team. The Panthers are a better team. They're clearly three at best, you know?
I just don't understand why they can't seem to get a balanced ground game. The Saints, that is.
The problem,
you know,
with the Saints is, over the last couple of years, they've never picked a guy and stuck with him. They always want to do the committee thing, and I don't think I don't think the running back by committee is necessarily the way to go. This is me as a New England fan who has Belichick, who has the flavor of the week. So, you know, I guess maybe it doesn't always apply to every team, but with the Saints, it just, you know, it's Ingram, it's Kerry Robinson. It used to be Pierre Thomas. You know, they had Sproles for a while. They could never pick who their main guy was. And, you know, I think that hurts their running game personally.
Oh, I think it hurts. I think it hurts their whole offensive scheme, because I think what happens is defenses come in and they become somewhat predictable. I mean, this is going to be a team that is evidently going to be putting the ball in the air 45 to 50 times a game. That's what they're going to do. And that becomes very, very, that becomes a very predictable game plan to scheme against. You know, you don't have to do a whole heck of a lot against that one. I mean, you know, everybody knows that the running game will open up the field for your passing game. Well, you know, consider for a moment they don't have a running game, and yet Drew Brees was still able to connect on 30 passes. That's actually pretty damn remarkable. I mean, think about it. But... quick hit here on this one. Boy, close game in the end. Dallas Cowboys eked out a one-point win over the New York Giants, 27-26. And that was a game down in Dallas where they were expected to win by 6. Point spread, Dallas favored by 6. Holy smokes. You know, I got to tell you, I'd like to say that bodes ill for the Dallas Cowboys, but I'll tell you what I took away from the game. The Giants, in my opinion, look worse than I even anticipated they would look on defense. That's what I took away from the game. Some might come back at me and go, well, yeah, but how can you say that? It was only a one-point game. There was no fight from either. Well, I mean, I guess maybe one could say the same thing on the Dallas side, but, I mean, there were, what, 53 points put up in this game total? I'll tell you, I'm not sure. I think it's pointing more and more to the fact that the NFC East is wide open.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree. Part of this, and Dallas is lucky to come out of this game with a win. They got some favorable penalty calls at the end, and the Giants just plain screwed up. You know, they were passing when they should have been running the ball. They could have ran the clock out, that Dallas would have never had time to get that last score they needed to win the game. So, you know, they should count themselves very lucky that they walked out of there with a win, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. I think the Giants gave it away. They lost the game more so than Dallas won the game, in my book.
And so many people came back with the exact same analysis on that one, that's exactly what it was. That really, when it came right down to it, Dallas should have lost this game. And I remember sitting and watching it, and I was rooting all along exactly for that, despite the fact I had picked Dallas to win it. But I wanted them to lose. Nonetheless, there it sits. I just think that, you know, when you take a look around the NFC East, this team, this division, in my opinion, has never looked worse. The Eagles lost
Redskins
in a game that
horrible.
The Eagles lost in a game that many people thought they were going to just, you know, that they should have just walked in and just taken that one away. We talked about, you know, reasons for why that might not have been. Dallas should have absolutely rolled right over the Giants and yet come out of there, as you say, luckily with a 1-point victory. And only one team right now in the entire division with a win, and that's the Dallas Cowboys. And look at the circumstances for how they got it. There you have it. So watch the NFC East. It might be the new NFC South, or it might be the 2015 version thereof. We'll see. And real quick, you had brought it up earlier. You said how you couldn't believe how the 49ers just absolutely mauled the Minnesota Vikings. When was that? That was Monday night, late Monday night. That was the second game on Monday night. 20-3, San Fran. This was a team that a lot of people thought, the offense isn't there. They're a team in transition. Colin Kaepernick's a mess. He's never really been able to find his stride. He doesn't know whether to run, pass, or, you know, what to do. They didn't think they had much of a running game. Carlos Hyde exploded. 26 carries for 168 yards and 2 touchdowns. Holy smokes. On the other side, Minnesota, everybody's thinking, well, okay, this is a brand new Minnesota team. Teddy Bridgewater has reignited them. Adrian Peterson is back. Minnesota defense is looking much better. It's a good defensive team. Not the way I think anybody expected it for Minnesota, is it? Minnesota was favored in that one 2.5. 2.5 going into the game. They were favored 2.5 on the road. How do you like that one? They lost by 17. I don't know. You can't say Minnesota was smelling themselves. What happened here?
Yeah, it's hard to say. You know, maybe it's opening week jitters. Maybe, you know, the 49ers, you know, have a different look about them now. You know, they have different players. I mean, they don't have Gore anymore. As you pointed out, Hyde had a great game. You know, they clearly had a good rushing game. If you have a solid rushing game, you know, it makes your offense much easier to run. So if this keeps up, the 49ers may be better than everybody expects. And, you know, Adrian Peterson really didn't have that great of a game. You know, he had 10 carries for 31 yards. I mean, that's not really that good. McKinnon behind him had 3 carries for 20. You know, they didn't really light anything up. And they were playing from behind all game, which I don't think the Vikings are a team that are built to play from behind. You know what I mean? They can't play catch-up very well. You know, where I think the Vikings need to stay in a game more. I mean, the scoring started in the second quarter with, the 49ers getting their first touchdown. But, you know, as the game progressed, the Vikings can't play the catch-up game. At least they're not built to play that kind of thing.
Well,
they don't have
an interesting stat, too, to me from this one, actually, Brandon, is time of possession. Where San Fran actually had the edge in that one by almost 7 minutes. I guess it was six minutes, really. San Fran, 33 minutes and 2 seconds versus 26:58 for Minnesota. That's not what we saw from Harbaugh before. You used to see, if I'm not mistaken, we saw a little more of a fast-paced sort of situation a la the Chip Kelly, but not quite as fast as Chip Kelly, but a little bit more like that from Harbaugh previously. This might be this might be evidence of the whole Tom Sula thing. You know, this is a new philosophy here. We're going to slow the ball down a little bit. We're going to go for ball control. Keep the other guys off the field. You know, so that was an interesting stat to me on this one. So we'll see, again, as you point out, we'll see how that continues to play out. Real quick, worst thing that came out of this weekend had to be the San Francisco new unis, or at least the alternate unis.
They were awful. The helmets clashed with the colors
God
on
almighty.
The shirt and pants. Too much black from a team that you've never seen use the color black.
Where in the world did that come from?
I don't know.
It doesn't
Nike.
Even match
That's
anything.
Nike. That's
it
Nike.
Doesn't
when
match
they, everybody should have known when Nike signed the contract with the NFL that it was going to be lead to bad uniforms. I mean, look at Oregon Ducks. They've been feeding them all them horrendous uniforms for years out there in Seattle. So, you know, we'll just have to see.
They didn't pull a color out of anywhere to make it the primary. The primary color is a color pulled from nowhere. Black,
right.
And then the secondary color was red.
Yeah,
huh?
Their other colors are red, gold, and white. How do you get black out of that?
Where do you get black?
Know.
Are you
don't
kidding
know.
Me? Dear God, that was horrible. Absolutely horrible. But nonetheless, they won. And, watch. That'll become the new good luck charm, and we'll see them a lot more often. How unfortunate that will be.
I hope they change the helmet color, because the helmet color totally clashed with the, you know, the jersey and the pants.
You can't do that, right? Everybody's got to have only one helmet, right?
I think the NFL's wavering on that, from what I read. There's been instances of to bring a different thing in, the in-cute helmet communication for quarterbacks. They've had to switch helmets on the quarterbacks in-game because of having communication issues. So I think the NFL is kind of softening on that. We may see them be allowed to have an alternate helmet again. I haven't heard much about it, but I know for a fact players have had to switch their helmets during the game. At least quarterbacks have.
Well, here's the bottom line, folks. We're going to be here with you all season long, and we will keep you up to date on what's happening with the helmets. You can bet. Because we got the next 19 or 20 weeks to be here with you every week. And we will be coming to you here on Wednesday evenings at this time. That is until the baseball season concludes, in which case then we'll just flip over and we'll take over the time slot that is currently held by our cleanup hitters program. Let me give you a quick rundown. Tomorrow night we will be right here with you for our 210th edition of our flagship program, the Frat House Sports Show. You're going to want to be here for that. I'm lining up the guests. We've already got an on the ground guy there with the Washington Redskins down there at ESPN 980 in Washington, ESPN 980 AM, and he'll be joining us here tomorrow evening. Matt DeBias will be here with us as usual. We're going to get into a whole bunch of football stuff. You can bet. As well, tomorrow night, the second week of the NFL season will be beginning. Friday night will be our Frat House Sports Fantasy Friday program with myself and Nick Swartz and Caleb. I'll be back here with you on Friday, and then be back here with you as well on Saturday afternoon at 2 p.m. for a relaxed Frat House Saturday program. All right. Wow, that's a full week for me. Yes, it is. Thank you all for jumping in here with us tonight. We're loving it. It's the beginning of the football season, and Red Zone Blitz is back. Get out there and enjoy your football. Thanks for being here with us.